Hi, I'm Shersha Mizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.
On Sunday, October 27th at 10:45 a.m., the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson, in collaboration with Out Hudson, invites you to Express Yourself Sunday, a celebration of all identities. In lieu of regular worship services at the church, we are opening our doors wide to include the diversity of our whole community. With free brunch provided by Able Restaurant in Hudson, and performances by Kevin Weldon and Craig Cunningham, and local host of Drag Queen Story Hour, Ella Gent. People of all ages are welcome to dress up in advance of Hudson's Halloween Parade, which follows immediately after. So come and celebrate and be celebrated in the fullest expression of your personhood as one of God's cherished creation. This Sunday, October 27th at 10:45 a.m., firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part for the generous ongoing support of Sam Sebrin of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello, Radioland. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. Today, I am joined by a returning guest. I'd like to welcome to the show, pain warrior Ginger Mace. Welcome, Ginger.
Hi, Heather. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be back.
Thank you so much. We're so glad to have you back. So Ginger and I were talking a little bit before the show and reflecting on the fact that we are both radio show hosts.
Yes, I did do a radio show, oddly enough, the Pain Warrior USA radio show. And I did that for a couple of years. It was a two-hour show on Friday evenings. And I just, you know, I talked about what it's like to be a chronic pain patient. I have fibromyalgia and about 10 other diagnosed pain disorders. So I would discuss that and, you know, information in the news that would help other patients, new medicines that came out, new treatments, things like that. And also I did, you know, little segments that were kind of special to me. So like the difference between living in New York and Arizona when you have chronic pain and fibrofog days, you know, I would tell funny stories about when I had an episode of fibrofog. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've been doing the show since 2016, and it's really been an amazing experience. It's put me in contact with doctors and activists and authors and YouTubers, and it's just so amazing to me. It's gone directions that I never even expected when I started out. Was that similar in your experience?
Yeah, very similar. It was, you know, a small radio show, but it seemed to have, it had more of an impact than I thought it would. But, you know, now that there's social media with radio shows and other things that you do, you can promote them and reach just countless people from all over the world. And I would hear from people thanking me for sharing my experience, sharing a tip or a hack, you know, a fibromyalgia hack that I found useful. And, you know, I enjoyed it so much that I'm actually kind of rebooting that radio show into a podcast. So oh, that'll wow. be coming up soon. That I'll be promoting all over my social media and mm-hmm. and getting folks involved and seeing if I can help them live their best life with chronic illness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was I originally didn't expect that I would be doing a medical freedom show. Like if you'd asked me a couple of years before I put in my application to do the show, it probably wouldn't have occurred to me, but it was definitely my experience as being the partner of a chronic pain patient and just seeing the ridiculous amount of misery that a chronic pain patient has to go through just being a person in chronic pain, trying to get medical treatment. They're just made to feel like they're criminal and less than human when going to the doctor's office.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've had that experience, and it really is, it's very draining emotionally, but also physically, because, you know, you have to get out of the house, go to these doctor's offices, sit in the cold, air-conditioned room. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just an uncomfortable experience when you already don't feel well. And then you add the emotional stuff on top of it, or, you know, you get to a doctor who's unfamiliar with fibromyalgia or unfamiliar with chronic regional pain syndrome, and you know it's just kind of an uphill battle a lot of the way. And there are some good doctors out there, don't get me wrong. I have a great one now, and I've been very, very lucky to have good doctors, you know, my whole life as a professional patient, as I call it. Mm-hmm. But yes, it can be very draining, it can be taxing, it can be just kind of heartbreaking to be a patient sometimes. I hear that from a lot of other people that are in a similar situation to me.
Just the pain itself can be so draining, so taxing. And then have to deal with a medical system that compounds that adds to that. We're just, it's not working.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a photo challenge going around. Actually, she's been doing it since September. There's this woman on Instagram who has come up with, different prompts for the day. So the other day, the prompt was heavy. So I made a graphic that said dead weight, and I kind of described the pain that causes extreme fatigue. And it's the kind of fatigue where I just literally feel like I'm dragging my body through the day, or like I use the term primordial ooze, like I'm trying to get out of it, but I just can't. I can't move. I can't get going. So yeah, it's definitely an exhausting thing to experience on a day to day basis. And it's interesting. My better half, I hope he doesn't get upset with me for mentioning this, but he had a flare up in his lower back, and he's been in a pretty large amount of pain. He does not take medication, so when he gave in and took some and he got some CBD, you know, I knew it was bad, and I could just see on his face how tired he was, not just because he's not sleeping well, mm-hmm. and not just because he's just in pain and that is mentally taxing, but just it's just very tiring to constantly be fighting that, or to be cognizant of every single thing you're doing, every twist, every bend. You know, he laughed and he winced and he kind of, because it hurts so much. You have to be so aware of every single thing you do so you don't hurt mm-hmm. yourself worse or cause more pain.
Yeah. And
a full-time job.
And what some of our listeners may not be aware of, particularly those who aren't currently suffering a chronic pain condition or experiencing a loved one going through the same, is that right now in our current political climate, pain medicine is virtually impossible to get. We have people going in for major surgery, people who've had devastating car accidents who are being left to suffer in the hospitals, or are being given massive doses of liver-destroying acetaminophen.
Yes.
Instead of actually having their pain treated. So we are really in a crisis situation in our medical field right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. About those surgeries, I read 2 days ago, I read an article that plastic surgeons now are, not wanting to give opioids after they cut people open. They stick tubes in them and suck fat out. It's just, they break bones in their noses. They cut mm-hmm. their breast open. Like, it's crazy to me. And what was even crazier is, kind of two things. One was the main doctor that was quoted in this article, she's against opioids, we don't need it, this is not a direct quote, but I'm kind of paraphrasing. She said, my patients, after their surgery, take Tylenol, ask any one of them, their pain is controlled. Well, further down in the article, it states that this doctor used to be an opioid addict. So there's bias there, too.
Yeah,
with
big
these
time.
Personal experiences medical professionals sometimes bring in. Mm-hmm. But it also struck me as very concerning because one of the plastic surgeons in the article suggested that patients take ibuprofen prior to their surgery and NSAIDs prior to their surgery, mm-hmm. Prescription ones. And, I'm not a doctor, but my experience when I've had surgery and just my knowledge from research and basically common sense, you're not supposed to take those things before surgery because there's a bleeding risk.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of risks involved.
Yes.
One of the common misconceptions about opioids is that they're damaging to the liver. And this comes from the common practice of mixing an opioid with an acetaminophen, because the acetaminophen
right.
does cumulative liver damage. So if you take like a small dose of Tylenol every day, eventually it's going to build to a toxic level in the body.
Right.
And
exactly.
they're giving people thousands of milligrams of this at a time, and the human liver just can't even process that.
Right. And, in my experience, adding acetaminophen on top of my opioid medication, yes, sometimes it does help, but that's my choice. Mm-hmm. I'm not given a pill or a dose of a pill with a particular milligram of this acetaminophen already chosen for me. And I know that some people argue, well, the acetaminophen in it will make it so if somebody tries to abuse it, they'll get sick from it. Well, that's great, but that doesn't really make much common sense.
No.
Great, I'm being sarcastic, but
mm-hmm. I know
I've
what you
always,
mean.
Like
they're putting your health at risk.
Sure, yeah, exactly.
For law enforcement.
Right, about 5 years into me, being on opioid therapy, up until that point, I was given Vicoprofen, which is, a Vicodin, so hydrocodone with mm-hmm. ibuprofen, or, like a Vicodin with, the Tylenol with the hydrocodone. But about 5 years in, I said, look, doc, can you just give me the opioid medication and I will add ibuprofen if, I'm having menstrual cramps and that's more mm-hmm. effective for me.
Okay.
Or I will add Tylenol with a dose of
right,
aspirin.
You want to be in some kind of control of that.
Yeah, and that's basically Excedrin minus the caffeine. So
mm-hmm.
let me choose what I need to take with it or take it alone if I feel that I need that. Give me the choice, basically.
Right, and they hate when a patient's going to take control of their own body. That's just, you're going
yeah,
against the grain.
I have noticed that sometimes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's because we don't have that provision for medical freedom that
right.
Dr. Benjamin Rush, one of our founding fathers, was calling for. He was calling mm-hmm. for a provision of medical freedom right when our provision for religious freedom was created and codified. And interestingly enough, people who are trying to have some measure of say in their medical treatment often find they have to fall back on the religious freedom provision and try to manipulate that in such a way that they can, say, refuse a vaccine or a certain medical procedure. Because right now, we don't really, there's nothing saying that we really have a right to our own body. And I think at the time that Rush was trying to push for this provision because of our nation's reliance on slavery, it was an untouchable subject.
Right.
You know,
I, uh, I agree with that completely.
Yeah, another one of those legacies of this, of slavery in our past that continues to affect us negatively going forward.
Definitely.
So, yeah. But going back to the opiate medicine, now this is not a pharmaceutical company creation. This is real plant medicine from nature, right. Sap of the Papaver somnifernum flower, and it's as pure and natural as can be. It is made to work with the human body. And most of the street drugs we hear about are just concoctions and bastardizations of this natural sap.
Yeah, absolutely. I've told people before, it's not the heroin that's dangerous. It's what they're adding to it to cut it to get more of a profit.
It's the prohibition that's really dangerous.
Yeah, and it's the prohibition and the violence that comes from that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Prohibitions have always spread violence. Our alcohol prohibition created a heyday for gangsters and violence, and we had alcohol that could make you blind or kill you in one shot. Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Whenever we have a prohibition, there can be no regulation of a substance that is still going to be marketed. So it's really a counteractive way of dealing with any kind of a social problem.
Yeah, and I've had discussions with people where they did not know that in Europe, heroin basically was given when patients were discharged from the ER. That was the medication they were sent home with when they had pain. But they don't have these huge addiction issues, so it's not, you know, it's not the drug itself.
Absolutely,
it's added to it.
Right.
You know, what's added to it that makes it dangerous, and it's, of course, how people use it, and like we talked about last time, personal responsibility. That seems to be missing from this whole opioid epidemic or opioid crisis conversation, which is really the illicit fentanyl and heroin crisis.
Exactly.
You can't blame an entire class of medications for something, you know, that to me is just ridiculous.
Isn't it so interesting how suddenly we have an opioid crisis, right, as most of the states in our country and even the federal government stand on the precipice of full legalization. The cat can't be kept in the bag anymore, that this wonderfully beneficial substance has been illegalized just for political profit. So now that the table's turning, we have the war on drugs. We have the militarized police. We have dependency on property seizure for revenue. So they have to create a new cash cow, a new target. And the wonderful thing about the opioids is how little people really understand about them, which is kind of disturbing. I mean, we really apparently live in a culture where a lot of people don't think about what's going into their body or the medical treatment that they're receiving. Some are very proactive and research that and want to know about what they're getting into. But the system encourages irresponsible use and not examining what your doctor is recommending. And
that's something
that personal responsibility thing you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, when I talk about personal responsibility, I know it always comes up when I'm talking about, you know, the opioid crisis and, you know, people who have gotten addicted to opioids, because especially if they started with prescription medication, because look, there was a point when they decided maybe I'm only supposed to take 4 a day, I'm going to take 6 a day, or the doctor said I don't need it anymore, but I like it, so I'm going to go find more. So there's personal responsibility in, like, using medication or drugs or a class of drugs that way. But I've always wondered, you know, let me put it this way. Whenever a doctor has said, I want you to try this medication, they would hand me the prescription and I would go research it. You know, back in the day, it was the physician's desk reference. Now it's Google and WebMD and all of those places. But patients also need to have personal responsibility, even if they're using medications or drugs legally, to really research and find out what does this do? What is it meant to do? Am I being prescribed off-label? Mm-hmm. What can I expect if I take this? What if I want to stop taking it? There are so many questions. And a lot of patients do kind of blindly follow what their doctor says. And they don't look it up. They don't research it. Not that I'm not trying to say that doctors are, you know, trying to do something that would be harmful to a patient or just saying, here, take the script, get out of my office. Right. I don't mean it that way. It's just, you know, educate yourself.
But we do have a personal responsibility to care for our own bodies and be aware of what's going on with them.
And that's part of why I call myself a professional patient, because it truly is a full-time job to, you know, take care of my symptoms, make sure I'm not making them worse, research medications, research side effects, you know, is this symptom related to fibromyalgia or endometriosis? You know, there's a lot that goes into it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Ginger Mace, pain warrior from Phoenix, Arizona. It's my guest today, joining us on the Medical Freedom Show. You are listening to WGXC Acra, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM. You're listening to listener-supported radio for open ears. We are a listener-supported station, so if you are interested in supporting WGXC and content like this, please go to our website, www.wavefarm.org. There you can listen to shows in our archive, and you can become a sustaining supporter to keep free independent radio in your community, because nowhere else do you get content like you do here on WGXC. This is the Medical Freedom Radio Show with Heather Martin. Thank you so much for listening. I will join you in the next segment. Hello, Radio Land. You are listening to Medical Freedom on WGXC Acra, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM. Today, I am speaking with pain warrior Ginger Mace. Thank you, Ginger, for joining us.
You're very welcome, Heather. Thank you for having me. I am very happy to be here. I always enjoy conversations with you.
Thank you, and likewise. So we were having a very lively conversation in our previous segment, covering a lot of ground about cannabis and opioids and just how it's such a struggle right now for people who really need medicine for quality of life to obtain them, and how this is coming from a manufactured crisis. Our political system has been for a long time dependent on the war on drugs. You really want to talk about a critical drug dependency? Look at our government, our police forces, who are dependent on a regular supply of property revenue from property seizures. And with the widespread legalization of cannabis, they're going to lose that ability to maintain themselves on the drug war proceeds. So what's happening right now is that traditional medicine that doctors have been able to prescribe to patients since the dawn of time is being threatened, and people are being threatened in ways never before conceived of. Well, maybe they were conceived of before, because we had our founding father, Dr. Benjamin Rush, who, back when the Declaration of Independence was signed, said that we needed a provision for medical freedom, just like we had for medical freedom, religious freedom. And now, lo and behold, we have people who are leaning on the religious freedom provision to protect their families, to protect their health, to protect their own bodies. And we still don't really have a provision in place that says that you own your own body. So, Ginger, thank you again for being on our show. I know you wanted to talk more about the cannabis subject, because Cannabis has been long demonized and used as a means to perpetuate the war on drugs and all the injustices that go with it, the mass incarceration. We have the highest per capita rate of incarceration here in the United States, in the world. Something's seriously wrong here. So let's talk a little bit about all the natural medicines that we should have access to and what's really going on with that.
Sure. Speaking of natural medicine, I want to get back to the cannabis in just a minute, but kratom or kratom, people say it either way, is something that's been around for thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah, it might sound new to a lot of people because it's recently developed more interest. And that's because it's as people are losing access to traditional opiate medication, here's something that may offer another avenue of relief.
Exactly. And it's a leaf on a tree, basically.
Exactly.
And hunters and gatherers would pick them off the tree, chew on them, and it would give them energy and help relieve their pain and discomfort while they were out, you know, hunting and gathering. It's something that I've used for over 10 years, and I've not had any issues with it. I research before I buy it from any vendor, and I only buy from people who I'm familiar with in terms of, I know other patients who have bought from them. Mm-hmm. I know that they do testing on the kratom that is imported to them. I do not buy from smoke shops, for example. Mm-hmm. So I vet the vendors that I use, which is probably part of why I've had such good luck. I've done research. Again, I've been taking personal responsibility and doing that. But it's coming under attack again.
Yeah.
The FDA had claimed that some people had died from it. And a while back, we did some digging into those numbers. And it turns out, of the people who died that had kratom in their system, it was not the only drug in any case, or you know, kratom's a plant, but there were drugs in the system with the kratom.
Yeah.
One of the deaths that they attributed to kratom was a gunshot wound that killed a person. So I'm not really sure how that worked.
Yeah.
I don't think you can make a bullet from kratom, but I don't know.
Yeah.
That was pretty ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things like that are coming up. And, you know, the FDA is having this issue with it. The DEA is saying, oh, it's, you know, a while back they were going to schedule one.
There is so much misinformation going on. I mean, we certainly saw it in the beginnings of the cannabis prohibition. Like, if you've ever seen the movie Reefer Madness, you know, one toke and you lose your mind and become a psycho killer. It's just total hyperbole. But now we're being hit with the same kind of hyperbole, like kratom will get you shot.
Right. It's the craziest thing. I've you know, when I educate people about it, I will stand there and take, I get a plain leaf that's been ground up, plain leaf kratom, and I make my own capsules. It's more cost efficient for me that way. And then I can blend different strains and get, you know, what I really like. For people who are unfamiliar with kratom, different strains, just like cannabis, has different strains. Mm-hmm. So think of it kind of that way.
Yeah.
And I would take the capsules in front of them and I would say, I'm taking it now. And half an hour later, hour later, 2 hours later, I would ask them at each time interval, am I acting like the same as somebody who would have taken heroin, do you think? Have you ever seen somebody who's done that? And of course, everybody was like, no, you're completely fine. I wouldn't even have known you took anything if you didn't.
Probably if they sat with a person who actually was taking real heroin too, they might have the same impression. We're certainly given a very stereotypical image, a very wrongly stereotypical image of people who use these substances, and it's not even reflective of the reality. There are many people who are wildly successful and who are drug users, but they keep that quiet and we don't hear their stories.
Yeah, that is very true. That is very true. The examples that these people that I would have asked about heroin, unless they knew someone in their personal life, and I say heroin, but it could be cocaine, it could be any of the Schedule One drugs. You know, we only have what the media shows us, or what, you know, the is in movies, or what the news puts on that night. But the big issue with Kratom, as far as I see it, is there's no way for Big Pharma to really make money off of it. They're going to try to figure out a way, I'm sure of that, but they can't really see the light at the end of the tunnel, which would be them making money. So, can't have it, you know.
That's a large reason for all of our substance prohibitions.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you follow the money. Yeah. You know, cannabis stood
exactly.
to...
Exactly, we talked about that last time, too.
It stood to compete with other treatments and other medicines. And also the alcohol lobby was very active in the suppression of cannabis initially.
Yeah, I remember reading about that, too. Now, in Arizona, we have kind of an interesting issue, and I'm sure in other states that have legalized marijuana or legalized medical marijuana or medical cannabis, is that oftentimes the argument for people who are against opioids is, well, in our state we have medical marijuana, so you don't need opioids.
Right.
If only that were true. Yeah, they're not interchangeable. And
no.
In fact, for a couple years, I was getting my prescription opioids and I was using cannabis in conjunction with it. And I had the best pain relief I've ever had. I was very active. I was working. I was not, you know, visibly intoxicated or anything like that. Obviously, I did not overdose and die because I'm still here.
Yep.
You know, they act differently on the brainstem. And, cannabis doesn't act on the brainstem. It acts on the endocannabinoid system. So you can't overdose in the combination of those two.
Right.
If used responsibly and reasonably.
Another medicine that's kind of like, I don't know, the triumvirate or the trifecta called sometime is the benzodiazepines. A lot of people who are in chronic pain who are taking opioids also need the benzodiazepines to control the muscle spasms that increase the pain.
Right.
And I hear so many people saying that they're being asked to choose between their pain medicine and their benzodiazepine, but they're really taking away from people the companion medicines that make the treatment more effective.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people. I was taking Soma, or the generic is Carisoprodol, which is a muscle relaxer, but it has kind of a benzodiazepine component to it. And I was taking my opioid medications for about 20 years. I was on that combination of medications. And then all of a sudden, you know, wake up one morning and it's, we need a black box warning from the FDA on Soma. It's too dangerous to mix with opioids. And my doctor stopped writing for it. It was just too, he was in too much risk, his entire practice. And there's several locations. So it's a big pain management clinic. But it just became too risky for doctors to do that. Thankfully, I didn't really have bad anxiety, but there are patients who have bad anxiety, and you're right, they had to choose. Do you want your pain medicine, or do you want your anxiety medication?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, it's crazy to me.
We shouldn't have to pick and choose for our health.
Yeah, exactly. I sat in front of my doctor, and I said, look, I know this is not you personally doing this, but I said, what is the logic in this? There are so many patients that have been on both for many, many years, like me, and now all of a sudden, you know, wake up one morning, turn the page on the calendar to the next day in your day planner, and it's too dangerous? What? I don't understand that. And he didn't either, you know. My doctor is very good. He's very reasonable. He has common sense, and he, you know, oftentimes he and I have conversations about these things that don't make sense, but his hands are tied. And also in Arizona, you have to choose if you want to use medical marijuana, then the doctor's probably will not write an opioid prescription for you. There are very few that will. But like in my situation, the pain management clinic that I go to, their policy is if you test positive for THC, you know, there's going to be an issue with it.
Right.
If it happens once, okay, you know, warning. It happens twice, come on, you know, we're going to have to monitor you closely. And eventually it will be, you will lose your opioid medication, or you mm-hmm. will have to stop using medical marijuana, regardless of how much benefit you get from either one or the combination of both.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not a good thing for patients at all.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, especially here, where the argument is, well, we have medical marijuana, you don't need opioids. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, they're not interchangeable. You know, mm-hmm. I could go get a strain today at the dispensary that next month might be a different harvest, might have different mm-hmm. terpenes, might yep. have different, you know, percentages of CBG, which is another cannabinoid.
One of the traits of cannabis is also to heighten sensation. So if you're in a case where you have a chronic pain condition, it might actually heighten the sensation of the pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the experience of a lot of people. And they're mm-hmm. now your pain medicine's taken away and you can only have something that's going to make you feel worse.
Yeah, very true. I've even experienced where when I was a medical marijuana patient here, that I went out, got a strain of medical marijuana, came home, used it. Worked great. Everything was, I mean, it was helping my pain. Mm-hmm. Everything was good. And the next time I went to the dispensary to get it, same exact thing, same strain, I should say, you know, different harvest, but it caused me the worst nausea I think I've ever had in my life. And this, you know, if you're living in chronic pain and you want to actually be able to have a life and quality of life, you have to be able to depend on your medication.
Yeah.
And medical marijuana is wonderful, but there are a lot of variables.
Right, it's a natural product, so it can vary greatly from harvest to harvest, and grow to grow.
Yeah, the variables in medical marijuana do not exist in prescription opioids.
Right.
And that's something that people against opioids have a hard time wrapping their head around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And and then they're fighting against the kratom, which is another mm-hmm. natural plant-based medicine. And our law enforcement has been pretty successful in eradicating the pure natural opium in its mm-hmm. in its raw form, which is really unfortunate for a lot of people because you know, for many people, like the prescription medicine might cause more nausea than the natural plant product. So it really just, it trickles down to so many people are being denied their optimal treatment. In fact, in one of my previous shows, I spoke with the lawyer who was talking about, like, for example, a person who had AIDS, HIV/AIDS, and was pretty much dying, but who was using, I think it was meth, to get energy, to get through the day so that they could be functional, so that they could get out of bed and have some semblance of quality of life. But because that substance is criminalized and demonized, we're saying to that person, well, your quality of life, your ability to get out of bed and function with your condition is against the law. This is a huge overstep of law enforcement. The fact that we've allowed law enforcement to even get in and have a say in what goes into our own bodies is just, it's anti-human, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. And it's there's so much.
Hello, Ginger?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. You just dropped off.
Yeah, sorry about that. There's been so much propaganda put out that even sometimes if someone who's unfamiliar or uneducated or just, you know, walking down the street every day, people who are not a pain patient or not, you know, interested in researching the history of these things, they hear the word marijuana or opium or morphine or methamphetamine, and they immediately, they get so uncomfortable because it's been ingrained for so many years that these are bad things.
That's immoral and illicit. Yeah. It's because we've been so indoctrinated and brainwashed because of the war on drugs, because they want to justify substance prohibition. When really, it is that prohibition itself that is creating more of a danger to our children, to our communities, and to ourselves. Especially when you want to go to the hospital and get medical treatment and you can't because you've let law enforcement into your doctor's office to tell you, tell how you should be treated.
Yeah, that is one of my biggest fears is that, you know, I obviously am on opioid therapy. I've been talking about it. And even if I wasn't able to communicate that, let's say an emergency room or a paramedic after a car accident, they could still look it up on the pharmacy records for Arizona, and they would see that. Are they going to give me an appropriate dose of pain medication based on my tolerance to the medication already? Am I even going to get any pain medication? Because someone might think, well, she's already on it. Her pain is controlled. But they don't realize, it does a decent job most days of controlling the pain I have now. But if you add more pain, it's reached its threshold, especially now that doses have been lowered and we have the 90,
Right, so people who are on the pain medicine who are being treated, and I've experienced this myself with my partner, they go in for surgery, and guess what? They're not getting any more medicine for being cut open, and it's really diabolical. I want to thank our listeners who have joined us. We are the Medical Freedom Radio Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. Today, I am speaking with pain warrior Ginger Mace from Phoenix, Arizona, who's been joining us today and sharing her story as a radio show host and activist and pain sufferer. Thank you so much, Ginger, for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we will join you on our next segment, and we will continue our conversation and talk about all of the barriers to real health care going on right now. It's a serious situation that our country is in at the moment. Hello, Radioland. Welcome to the Medical Freedom Show. This is your host, Heather Martin. You're listening to WGXC ACRA, Catskill Hudson, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'd like to welcome back to our show Ginger Mace, pain warrior from Phoenix, Arizona. Thank you, Ginger, for being here.
And thank you, Heather, for having me.
Well, we were just talking about how medicine is not a one-size-fits-all type of arrangement. Not only do people have radically different reactions in their own bodies to a certain medicine, something that works for one person may have the opposite effect for another person. But our regulations are telling us now that if you take certain medicines, you can't have pain treatment. You have to suffer. And it's life-threatening. There are many people who have lost their lives already since these regulations hit and pain medicine went under such tight controls. And I'm not talking about people who died from misuse or abuse. I'm talking about people who have legitimate health issues, who were cut off from the only thing that gave them quality of life. Many of them have taken their own lives tragically enough. And we've talked about that some on this show, just the high rate of suicide. When you saw those news articles about the veteran suicide skyrocketing, that was when the VA took an approach to no patient-controlled pain medicine. I know because my partner was in the VA, and they insisted that he stay on a medicine that he was having a bad reaction to. And they're also pushing those implantable pumps in people's bodies.
Yeah. Yes, they are. They sure are. And I know a lot of people who have had so many issues with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're advertising these pumps on Facebook and Instagram, and it's just...
It's just to take your ability to control your dosage away from you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there's so many things that can go wrong with mm-hmm. it once it's implanted. I mean, some of them are very
huge
successful,
risk of infection.
Risk of infection. I think it's called ankylosing spondylitis.
Mm.
I think
I've heard of that.
I think that's
it's another chronic pain condition, right? Spondylitis.
Yes, it is for sure. A lot of people that I know that have had them implanted have had to have them removed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's two surgeries to go through. I'm really scared of those.
Yeah. Yeah, me
too. I don't think I would ever get one.
I wouldn't want something like that in my body. No way.
No, definitely not.
that's really scary. So, Ginger, we wanted to talk about a recent bust of legal medicine.
Yes. So it's a story that started in New York City. The actual publishing of the story, and it's gone not only nationwide but worldwide. This isn't my story necessarily to tell, but I do know the two gentlemen that are involved in it, and I say gentlemen with the most respect. That I don't think there have been two men more deserving of the title gentlemen. These are two brothers that are involved in this. One of them has a business where he sells kratom and CBD, and the other brother has a business where he specializes in CBD for pets, including parrots. He was talking on a podcast about how his parrot had this condition, and he said, well, let me try to give him CBD, or her. I'm sorry, I don't remember if it's him or her.
Uh-huh.
And the CBD helped. I've known the brother who has the kratom and CBD business for 5 years. I've bought product from him. I have come to him at 1 o'clock in the morning with questions about product. I have they're both just really stand up great guys who are in these businesses primarily to help people. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know,
so you know these two guys who are in the business.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes into business to make money, sure, mm-hmm. but their primary focus really is the people they help.
To try to help people. So what happened?
Yes. Well, they ordered a shipment of hemp flower from Vermont to be shipped to New York City where they live, and they mm-hmm. run their businesses. Hemp is legal in the U.S. now. Hemp, by definition, is 0.3% THC or less.
Yeah, you see it in the grocery stores now.
Yeah.
Hemp seed products all over.
It looks very similar to marijuana buds. So the shipment left Vermont on a FedEx truck, and it was stopped. The Vermont police cleared it. I don't exactly know if the truck was stopped or somehow in Vermont the police became aware of the shipment. They checked the paperwork. Everything was fine. The truck was sent on its way. From what I understand, FedEx was not pleased with that assessment, and the 106 pounds of legal hemp made its way to New York City to a police station due to FedEx calling ahead and letting them know that this was coming in.
Company sent it right to the police?
From my understanding, yes. I do know that it was the shipping company who contacted the police in New York City and said the shipment is coming in. To kind of make a long story short, the brother who runs the CBD business for pets was arrested. He actually went to pick up the shipment from FedEx where it was being held due to this, you know, concern about it. And he was basically arrested for this. And the other brother, you know, is out 106 pounds of hemp, which means he loses business sales. Patients don't get the natural medication that helps them, and just a ripple effect.
Yeah.
But this other brother was arrested. He was he's not in jail currently, but the 75th Precinct in New York City on their social media was bragging about this 106-pound marijuana bust, and it just wasn't. It was hemp. And it's a very interesting case in that there was the proper paperwork. It was already cleared in Vermont. So, what, you know, it's the same stuff that left Vermont that was cleared that arrived in New York City with the proper paperwork on the truck. So it's the last post that I read regarding the 75th Precinct Police, and in my opinion, trying to walk back what happened, is that it's possible that the marijuana bust might not be marijuana. It might be hemp. But one of the issues with this, and this, of course, is an ongoing thing, one of the issues is that the field test that is used, yes, it detected a little bit of THC, but legally hemp can have 0.3% or less of THC. So, yeah, of course it would be a little bit in there. Mm-hmm. But these two brothers are wonderful people. I have their information on the Pain Warrior USA social media, because I just, like I said,
do you have a website link that you would like to share with us? Also, I want to remind our listeners that this radio show has a Facebook page, facebook.com/medicalfreedomradioshow. All one word, just facebook.com/medicalfreedomradioshow. There you will find links to all of our past shows and things that our guests have posted there for more information. So we'll have links coming soon from Ginger. And
yes, I will definitely share that information. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as
what is the URL? We could say it on the radio, too.
For me or for the brothers?
For the website, you were just Pain Warriors.
Yeah. Yeah. So the name of my organization is Pain Warrior USA. So on Facebook, on Twitter, and on YouTube, just search Pain Warrior USA. It will come up.
Mm-hmm,
it will come up. Yep, Pain Warrior USA. Mm-hmm. And then on Instagram, I'm actually Pain Warrior Princess.
Pain Warrior Princess.
Yeah, someone gave me that moniker and my dad's nickname for me when I was little. And still, actually, so many years later, is Princess. So
aww.
On Instagram, I'm Pain Warrior Princess. And YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, it's Pain Warrior USA. And I will post, I have posted information about this, you know, quote, unquote, marijuana bust that's actually hemp. And I'll continue to update it as I get information from the brothers and I see more things posted. But I'll also have their information, too, so people can check out if they want to, you know, what they have to offer. And, yeah, they can mm-hmm. see what it's all about.
I briefly saw a story online recently about a similar case of a big kratom bust, but they thought it was something else.
Ouch.
And they busted just a bunch of legal kratom and had all the little packages sitting in a bin. And I regretfully didn't get to read that article in detail, but it's something we're seeing a lot of, are these erroneous busts on legal substances.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, one of the past guests I've had on the show was Nolan Suesley, and his group was, let's see, Nolan's Tribe of Warriors for Cannabis. He was suffering from stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and he had a police raid of his hospital room, and he He caught video of it on his cell phone and uploaded it, and it went viral. Fortunately, it went viral. People around the world saw this abuse of police power. And I was fortunate enough to have him as a guest on my show. So it's one of my past shows that you might find there on facebook.com/medicalfreedomradioshow. Unfortunately, Nolan has passed away. He's no longer with us, but he did spend his final days fighting for the rights of all patients.
Wow, that's amazing that he was still fighting like that. But I just wondered, don't the police and law enforcement have anything better to do? Anybody that, like, drug kingpins that are bringing in illicit fentanyl from China and heroin from wherever it's coming from. Shouldn't they be going after those people?
My guess is some decades from now, we're going to find out that, like, the CIA and different government offices were actually involved in importing these substances, because it's just too convenient that they're coming in the way that they are right when our government is trying to foment a new, basically trying to rebrand the war on drugs to be about these opioids. It's just too convenient that these illicit, dangerous, poisonous products are being imported in at the rate that they are. It just doesn't seem like organic black market to me. It seems very contrived, too convenient.
Yeah, it's like it's working for too long to be just luck, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie that Jeremy Renner was in called Kill the Messenger. Are you familiar with it?
No.
It's about a journalist that I believe he was writing for the San Jose Mercury News, if I'm not mistaken. Gary, I don't remember the last name or if Gary was the last name, but he found out through different sources and, you know, kind of kept pulling threads of different stories and different sources and things he was finding out that the CIA was involved in cocaine with the rebels in Nicaragua, I think. I haven't seen the movie in a long time, and I
was think of their nickname, the Cocaine Import Agency. CIA stands for.
Well, yeah, that kind of goes along with the Kill the Messenger movie, but it's a it's a very good movie. I like.
I'll have to check that movie out.
Yeah, I think it came out in 2014 or 2015, something like that, but. Yeah, it's a very interesting story that's kind of very related to what we were just talking about. So I think you might enjoy it.
Yeah, there's just so many stories out there that relate to this. You know, we have the suppression of cures and treatments for devastating illness that are just being held up in copyright offices and not released to humanity. There's something about this monetarily driven system that's just not working when it comes to healthcare. And I just think we need some creative envisioning of what a world with medical freedom could look like.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would, I mean, it would certainly help people like me and millions upon millions of other chronic pain sufferers in our country alone.
Yeah. Ginger, we're down to the last 5 minutes of our show. It always goes too quickly.
It sure does.
Yeah. So thank you again for being on the show. Ginger is a returning guest to the Medical Freedom Show. She's on previously, and the link to that is somewhere on the Facebook page, facebook.com/Medical Freedom Radio Show. That's where I post all of the... Well, when the show becomes the podcast, I post the link up there.
It was February 2018.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I'll keep going until I can get, you know, like the blazer, like the 5-time host, like Saturday Night Live. Let's do that.
Yeah, okay, let's go.
We always have great conversations, and it's nice to talk with someone like yourself that is on the same wavelength with so many different things, and a lot of it is common sense, but a lot of it is really understanding history and understanding, you know,
it's a big picture here.
Yeah,
a very big picture to take in, and it's all interrelated.
Mm-hmm.
Our history, slavery, prohibition, all of those things, our financial system, it just all comes together. And I think it all relates to what Dr. Benjamin Rush said, that we really, to be a functioning free country, there needs to be a right of medical freedom and an undeniable ownership that an individual has of their own body.
I agree. It seems like it should just be something that it just
Yeah.
It just isn't, actually.